Today's episode of Hook, Line, and Splitter is brought to you by Lightstar Energy Group, a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users, tailored products and contracts, lower costs, and personal attention, and outstanding service. 732-722-5880, 732-722-5880, to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by NJR Home Services. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Good day, everybody. Welcome back to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Our guest today is Blue Claws infielder Casey Martin, third-round pick of the Phillies in 2020 out of the University of Arkansas. He was a great guest. We talked about his time at Arkansas, growing up out there, playing in the SEC, stealing bases with the Blue Claws this year, how he's grown as a player and a person over the 2 years since he's been drafted, playing here with the Blue Claws for manager Keith Werman, who coached in the Padres system or with the big league Padres for the last couple of years and a lot more. So we'll get to Casey in just one moment. Blue Claws fans, the Phillies futures here with MILB TV, all home and most road games on your device. The only way to watch the Blue Claws is MILB.TV. Subscribe today to watch over 6,500 games, including all available playoff games from over 100 minor league baseball teams live or on demand. Download the MILB First Pitch app from the Google Play or Apple App Store to watch on the go. Use promo code BLUECLAWS at checkout to save $10 on a yearly subscription. Visit MILB.TV for details today. So we'll get to Casey in a moment. Blue Claws on the road. They're in Bowling Green, Kentucky right now. They will be back home at Shoretown Ballpark on May 24th. After the interview with Casey, we'll come back and do a promo preview and some other notes as well. Did want to mention earlier this week, we did add to the Blue Claws Shore to the show list. Very exciting. Francisco Morales, who was here in 2019, is in the big leagues with the Phillies. He was called up this week. He made his debut in Seattle on the 9th, which was Monday the 9th. So very exciting for Francisco. Congrats to him. He's the third member of the 2019 Blue Claws, along with Rafael Marchand, who was his catcher, and Alec Bohm, who debuted with the Blue Claws that year, was only here for a month before getting promoted. So those three are now big leaguers. Rafael's currently injured, but Bohm and Morales in that Phillies dugout with Joe Girardi now. So congrats to Francisco, number 116 to go from the Shore to the show. Let's get to Casey Martin. When we come back, we'll wrap it up, and we'll do some more with upcoming promos, some Blue Claws nuggets, and notes. Hook, Line, and Splitter with Casey Martin next. Our guest today, Blue Claws shortstop Casey Martin, joining us from Bowling Green, Kentucky, where the Blue Claws are this week. Casey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Good. So you're from Arkansas. This is as close as you're getting in the Sally League, and I guess and anywhere in the Phillies minor league system until you get up into AAA. How many friends and family you have out there this week?
My grandma and grandpa actually came yesterday and they're staying for the weekend. And my parents are actually on their way up with my best friend, his wife, and his little girl. So I got a little bit of family coming up.
That's very cool. So it's been about 2 years, 23 months since you came into the Philly system. But let's start here, 2022, a month into the season. How do you feel out there right now?
I feel pretty good, honestly. I'm pretty confident. Still working on some things, obviously. But it's been good.
So you guys have made, you turned a few nice double plays. You did last year with Jonathan Guzman, up here and down there, of course, in Clearwater, Luis Garcia. How do you feel defensively?
It's honestly been phenomenal. Like, that's probably like one of the biggest, like, I think, compliments I've had coming into pro ball was being able to work with the guys that we brought in and, being able to make a difference on the defensive side, because in college I really wasn't that stable when it came to it. So being able to make the progress that I've made and surrounding me with the amount of talent that we have, it's actually been phenomenal.
On Sunday, you made that play against Hudson Valley. DJ had a ball kind of deflect off his glove and you threw the guy out at home plate. At what point, you know, were you immediately thinking, you know, get the batter at first base if you can? When did you think you can get the guy at home?
Yeah, you know, my immediate reaction was, you know, we got a shot still, and I was going to go to first, but then whenever I went to get the ball, I was looking up, and the base runner at third had, like, froze for a second. He, like, hesitated. So I was like, you know, we actually still have a shot. We got no outs. I mean, and a guy at first ended up already being at first anyways. So it was kind of like that little bit of hesitation that I saw from the runner, and I decided to just, you know, send it on home, and, you know, we ended up getting out, so.
The manager this year, of course, Keith Werman, spent the last couple of years with the Padres. They, you know, they have Manny Machado. They have Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis. So he's worked, you know, with some great players. What have you learned from him in the month this season and in the spring?
Yeah, so Worm is actually really good when it comes to defensive stuff as far as hand work and ISO glove stuff, along with the tags that we've been working on, which is really, really good. It's all stuff that big leaguers do every single day and they work with. So being able to bring that knowledge to us has actually been really good. It's been very, very helpful. So having him here is honestly a big token to us guys.
Last year, I know you spent a lot of time with Marty Malloy down in Florida. And when you were up here with Tank, I guess you probably put, just in terms of style, Marty and Tank, Keith and Tank are kind of on one side. Marty's on the other side, you know, just kind of the personality intense. You know, they all do a great job and they just do it differently. What about the difference working with Marty compared to the, you know, Tank and Keith, who are a little more kind of, I don't want to say laid back, but like,
you but know, they are.
Yeah. Okay. Laid back. Then there you go.
They are. Yeah. No, they're very laid back. They're very, you know, fill it out, you know, do what you need to do. And then, you know, you have Marty, just a fireball that's just explodes on everything, like super high energy. You know, the difference between them is just simply that. And they all have good information when it comes to it. And they all think the same way when it comes to fielding and ways to get better and how to progress on those, which is what I love about working with all of them. But yeah, the difference between, you know, the laid backness is, hey, get your feet under you, get in the reps you need to get in to feel good. And then, you know, go do what else you need to do. Where Marty, it's like, hey, like, we're going to get after it. I don't care what you got to do. I need all of your effort right now for 30 minutes straight, 100%. So, you know, but you get two different styles, which is cool because, you know, that's pro ball for you. Everybody brings different styles to the game.
I didn't mean laid back. I didn't mean that some guys do it, like, don't do the job. They all do the job. They just do it differently.
Yeah, exactly.
What have you learned now? It's been 2 years, you know, since you got drafted. I guess the first year was kind of a non-season. You probably got to instructional league in the fall. How have you grown as a person, as a player, in the 23 months since you heard your name called?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing would be, you know, learning how to deal with failure. You know, baseball is constantly a wave, is how we describe it here, and you know, you got to ride the high ones and you got to learn how to get out of the low ones. So learning how to deal with your failures and progress on your successes, and also learning how to stay away from the failures and over, I think it just comes with the maturing part, knowing that, hey, you got 130, 140 plus games. You're going to play every single day. So learning how to show up every single day and be the same player, I think, is probably the biggest thing that I've really, like, worked on. And I feel like I've come a really, really long ways when it comes to dealing with the failures, because I used to get all mad and, you know, get upset and wouldn't be a team guy. And now, as I've gotten older and I've gotten the pro ball, I'm like, all right, you know, I made an error. It is what it is. Professional players, the big leaguers make errors, or the big leaguers, they strike out. Like, it's okay. At the end of the day, you know, I got to learn how to flip the page, which I have, and learn how to not to portray it on my defensive side or take my defense side to my offensive side. You got to learn to turn the page quick. So I would say, like, that's like the biggest thing that I've actually learned in pro ball.
When you got drafted 2 years ago, did you think the Phillies were going to be one of the teams that could grab you, or did the Phillies interest kind of just come on draft night for, you know, as far as you were concerned?
Yeah, honestly, I did think that they were going to end up, you know, somehow getting me. And, well, here they are, right? You know, they did. So it was definitely cool.
How were you following? I guess, you know, you couldn't, there were restrictions or whatever, you know, how'd you follow the draft?
Yeah, I actually ended up staying in a hotel and just watching it on the TV. And my agents were, you know, relaying stuff back to me and, you know, what they're hearing and what they're talking about.
So what's that feeling like when you finally hear your name, you know, on the broadcast there?
Honestly, it was kind of like a sense of relief in a weird way, you know, because that's something you worked your whole life to get to. And then when you finally hear it, you just felt like, you know, a whole bunch of weight just came off your chest, honestly. But it was also like a sense of pride, like, hey, you made it, you know. You're telling yourself, like, wow, you know, we're here. So, like, now what, you know?
How did the – because I guess the draft was probably early June. You hadn't played in a couple of months, unfortunately. So how did you kind of stay busy and, like, you know, you still had classes or whatever, but what were those 3 months like? Because I'm sure you had hoped that you'd be in Omaha or whatever when, or getting ready to go to Omaha when the draft happened.
Yeah. I ended up finishing school for the year and I worked out quite a bit. Me and Kevin Copps, we go to the gym just about every single day. A lot of people know his name now, you know, Golden Spikes winner last year, Padres organization. And spent a lot of time with him in the cages, some coaches back home from Arkansas in the cages in Northwest Arkansas. And I just started working on things that I needed to work on. And then obviously, you know, the winter time came and all I did was hunt. So
who's a better hunter, you or Lindell?
Oh, me for sure. Lindell just started.
Oh, okay. A couple. Oh, he did a couple of years. I remember a
couple
of
years.
Yeah. Yeah. And when he was here in 19, he was talking. How long have you been doing it?
Ever since I was probably old enough to walk on. So my dad, you know, drilled it in our heads, you know, when we were young, and ended up just loving it. So.
I know you grew up in Arkansas. When you had the opportunity to go play there in Fayetteville, was that or what other schools did you consider?
Yeah, I was I really wanted to go to Arkansas. That was my dream school. I was kind of wanting to go to Ole Miss before that, during the whole process when I was in high school. And but ultimately, Arkansas was my, like, one dream school. Like, if I could go there, like, that's where I was going to go. And then I was also thinking about going to UALR, which is University of Arkansas at Little Rock, you know, Sun Belt Conference, Division One, and just because it's close to home. But ultimately, you know, we decided that for the best of, you know, for my abilities with baseball, it would be to go to, you know, the SEC. Yep. And play at the University of Arkansas and whatever route it was.
So you got to, I know you faced your current teammate there, right? Andrew Schultz? When he was
a yeah. Yeah.
How'd you do?
The hitter before me hit a home run off of his fastball that was 99. And then I ended up getting 5 curveballs and I walked back to the dugout. So
he really threw you 5 curveballs?
He sure did. That's and he funny. Won't deny it.
Do you give him crap for that today?
I do, because we actually have the same agency. So my agent gave me the scouting report on him and they gave him the scouting report on me. So they're like, hey, don't throw him fastballs. Just throw him all curveballs. So
when you play in that league, you know, you're playing, you know, that might as well be like, you know, high A and you're in college at the, you know, at the time. Right. So who were some of the better guys that you had faced then and that maybe you faced in the pros or that are doing good things? Who did you face back in the SEC that you remember?
Yeah, Singer was a really good one with Kansas City. Cohars with Kansas City. Those were Friday and Saturday back-to-back days. Casey Mize was a good one.
Tigers.
Yes. The Crochet. We faced Crochet from Tennessee, you know. White Sox. So, I mean, we saw a bunch of big time arms whenever I was there.
Yeah, the other thing is the atmosphere and the passion that you get in those leagues down there. You can't up here in the Northeast. We just don't appreciate the intensity and what it means to the fans. You know, you see the football stadiums and everything, cause they're on national TV every week, but you know, you go to Vandy and they have like 12,000 people there or whatever, and it's packed on the berm, and you go to Arkansas and it's packed in South Carolina. They have, you know, 9,500 in a little stadium there, and it's packed. You don't appreciate that in the Northeast, what that means down there, you know, in the SEC.
Yeah, it's it's different down in the South in the SEC. You know, it's the fans, you know, they make it about them as well. You know, they live for that. And in a lot of places, you know, you look at Arkansas, we don't have a professional team of anything. We have Arkansas baseball. We have Arkansas football, Arkansas basketball. That is our pro teams there. So they take it seriously like a pro team, which I think across the board, as far as SEC goes, they all do that, which is, you know, it's awesome. It makes the atmosphere that much better.
So fast forward back to 2022, you guys are playing with these new rules, and I want to kind of get your thoughts on, we'll start with the clock. You know, everybody talks about the pitch clock from the standpoint of the pitcher. What kind of adjustments do the batters have to make?
Yeah. So you have to be in the box in a certain amount of time or you automatically get a strike. I don't really like it just for that reason. And, you know, you have different styles of pitchers. Right. So, you know, some guys work slow, some guys work fast. Some hitters like pitchers that work fast, some like them slow. But, you know, say you like foul ball off, get out of the box, you have to be like right back in. You don't have a minute to just take a deep breath and then be like, all right, like, let's go.
If there's nobody on base, they put the clock at 14 seconds and you got to be ready at 9. So it doesn't give you any time. Yeah.
No. So, you know, in that sense, you know, I don't like it. It definitely speeds up the game. But I have seen it, you know, kind of take the bat away from some hitters, which is why I don't agree with it, because you need a fair chance. And I don't think a clock should, you know, have to justify whether or not, you know, they're going to get a chance or not.
Would you like it a little more if maybe they extended it, like instead of 14 and 18 with somebody on base, if they did say 17 and 22 or something like that, or
it's just tight right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a very short, small window to get in there. So, you know, even if they decide to keep the clock, which is cool, extended it maybe a little bit, give the hitters a little bit more time. Sometimes give the pitchers a little bit more time. Also, they just need to be more clear on when they start it and stuff like that, because there's been times where I've seen pitchers get on the mound and there's 6 seconds left and they just got done warming up. So,
yeah,
you know, it should be regulated a little better if that's the case.
The one, somebody said, I forgot who it was now. They said that I think it was Keith. They don't mind the clock in general, but between innings, you gotta be really careful. Between innings, like if you're that first batter of an inning, the first pitch of that inning might come, and if you're looking at the clock, you might be in trouble. You got to watch the pitcher to make sure, and it's just a little yep. awkward at times, right?
Exactly.
The bases are bigger; they're 3 inches bigger on each side. You guys have run as a team a lot. You've gotten your fair share. Is that noticeable for you as a base runner, or you guys just want to run anyway?
Yeah, you know, we want to run anyways, but it is, you know, there you can definitely feel a difference when you're running. Even on defense, you still feel a difference. Like even when somebody steals and we go to cover, I mean, it's noticeably bigger. And Adam Everett even, you know, said something a couple weeks ago when we were doing some defense stuff before the game at home. He was like, wow, you know, these are actually – I didn't think they were this much bigger, but they're noticeably bigger. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's different.
It looks like when I first saw it, they mailed them and they, you know, they came, they were in the office. They look like a pizza. They're huge. They look like a pizza, pizza box.
Yeah, they do.
So you guys have run a lot. Is that something that was a focus for you guys in the spring when you were down in Florida? I know you have a group of guys that you know, where pretty much everybody in the lineup can steal a base. Is that, was that a key thing, or is that a Phillies thing? You know, tell us about the background here. You guys are fifth most in the minors in steals going into the game here Friday night.
So I think the goal with that was changing, you know, bringing Preston and some new staff in was changing the direction that the Phillies were headed in, and you know, changing the diagram of how Philly baseball is. And I think one of the biggest ones was base running. We really like harped on base running. We worked on base running, worked on steals, worked on bag touches, angles throughout the entire spring training. They kind of want to change that, because they truly believe, you know, if you're going to play in the big leagues, then you're going to be a good base runner. And we have plenty of guys in the org that can steal a base, no doubt. So I think they really wanted to utilize what they already had in the org, and they wanted to make it better, because we haven't really been that great when it comes to little things like that. And those are little things that can win you a game, mm-hmm. or they could win or lose you a game. Say you didn't get the extra 90, or you didn't take the first to third, and then you had an opportunity to score and you didn't. Like, it's just the little things. And I think Joe Girardi truly believes in, how can he help us? Is he a good base runner? Like, that's kind of where he starts at. And so that's kind of what they've really like instilled.
When you steal a base, can you feel the distance is a little short? It's 4.5 inches, which doesn't seem like a lot over 90 feet. But when you get a bang bang play there, can you feel that those 4.5 inches as you dive in? Like, is it notable for you as the runner? Or you can't really tell.
Yeah, you can't really tell, honestly. I mean, some guys might, but I mean, at the end of the day, you're still trying to get there to there as fast as you can. No, sure. You know?
60-yard dash, you versus Rojas.
I don't know. I'm probably going to take Rojas in that one, honestly.
He's pretty fast.
Rojas, he's
really fast.
He gains, he gets faster as he goes. I feel like me, you know, I hit a certain point, I just kind of plane out. And as he gets going and going, he gets faster and faster and faster.
So when you're on first base, what's your approach when you're looking to steal a base? What are you looking for that will determine whether or not you can go during this plate appearance?
So obviously, you know, I'm looking for the times. What is he to the plate? But does he have like a hitch in his hip or his shoulder whenever he goes to throw? Say he's 1-2, 1-3, which is, you know, fairly quick. Maybe he has like a little arm hitch, which slows him down just a little bit. Is he going, you know, set, breathe, let it down, go? Like, trying to pick up on some little stuff like that that'll give me an extra advantage to, you know, get there before they do. So.
And Pat has the clock, obviously.
Yes, Pat has a clock, Worm has a clock, and they're relaying it back and forth. And
can you use the pitch clock? Like, you know, when it gets to one, he's got to throw it.
Yeah, he gets to one, he's got to throw it. A lot
but
of
you got
to
be careful, because sometimes the umps always give it to him. Yeah.
No, they miss it a lot of times.
There was a over the weekend, I think it was Sunday, against Hudson Valley. It might have been Friday. Or no, he didn't play Friday. It might have been Thursday against Hudson Valley. One of their batters was in there, and I forgot who was pitching, but the clock ran out, and whoever was pitching for you guys held it. He probably threw it 2 seconds after the clock ran out. The batter swung and missed, and then he turned and said something to the ump. I mean, the ball was clearly out of the zone. He chased it. And the only thing I could think of was that he was saying that the clock ran out, and he had been focused on the clock, and it probably screwed up his timing and all that stuff. You just got to be careful. You got to be careful relying on that, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's like, as a hitter, like, I try not to, you know, look at the clock, even though it's right behind the pitcher, because then automatically, you know, you just lose that focus real quick, and then you're like, oh, crap, you know, he's throwing the ball.
Yeah. So when you got here this year, we had everybody fill out a little questionnaire, you know, favorite player and all that good stuff. And your favorite player was Dustin Pedroia. And having watched you play for, you know, a good few months now, last year and this year, you can certainly see it. How did you become a Dustin Pedroia fan?
Yeah, so growing up, I was actually a Boston Red Sox fan. And my whole family is actually Cardinal fans. So complete opposite there.
Yeah, everybody, I know everybody within like 300 miles of St. Louis is a Cardinal fan. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unreal. But I think, you know, growing up watching him, you know, he was a small guy. But I think it was more so the style of play he had. He played hard. He played smart. And he left it all out on the field every day. And, you know, for a small guy to be able to do that and be successful like he was, you know, I kind of pictured myself as that type of player.
So play that reminded me of him was the play at the plate in the Asheville series on the Saturday afternoon. Fly ball to center, you're at third, you tag in. Somebody posted it on some Instagram site, and it got like 3.5 million views. I heard from like five people that I hadn't heard from in years. I'm like, hey, is this you calling this? I'm like, yeah, that's me. Why don't you listen on open night? So it was the play at the plate. Take us through that. The catcher didn't have the ball, but he blocked your path, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously, you know, they thought it was dirty. Even the next day, they still chirped at me, saying it was dirty, telling me how to slide this and that. You know, the Baron hit a shelf. Fly ball, Worm wanted to extend it and see, you know, how close we could get, you know, see what our limitations are. And, you know, I was actually going to the back of the plate, and you can see if you slow it down that I kind of turned my shoulder in and I was trying to like get my hand around the back of him, but he was standing in the middle of the way. And then last minute he slides into my lane. So he's obviously bigger than me. I'm a small guy. And I want to protect
armed.
Myself.
He's got the equipment.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I want to protect myself. I don't want to, you know, possibly tear something. And so the best thing to do is not try to get out of the way in case I get clipped or something. You know, so I just kind of last minute, he slid into my lane and, you know, I just kind of lowered my shoulder to protect myself. And yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's a baseball play.
Yeah. And you have the right to the spot if he doesn't have the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
And they called you safe. Yeah, they called you safe. That it was weird though because the umpire never signaled safe. Did he say it?
No.
Because then the ball is just sitting there, and then everything happened, and nobody even knew if the play was dead. They never called you safe. They never called you out. It took a little while to figure out what the heck happened.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was expecting the benches to, you know, just come straight out, and I think it's what he was waiting on, honestly. But
it is what it is. You got the run, and then. Yeah. And then you guys got the win. Now, I know you've had a couple of tough road series, but seem to be playing pretty well. You won the last two home series, got a nice win yesterday. How do you feel overall now with the way the team's playing? Seems like they're playing you guys are playing a little better.
Yeah, I think it's a complete flip from the beginning of the year, obviously. You know, we have had a couple tough road series, but
it happens.
Seeing our pitching, and, you know, not give up free bases, actually attack. It's been outstanding. Our defense has been phenomenal. Our, you know, our bats are starting to heat up. So, you know, obviously we're heading in the right direction and we're doing the right stuff. Now we just need to figure out how to keep doing it and to build on that and keep going.
And you play the guitar. Do you bring it on the road?
My parents are actually bringing it down here. I didn't want to bring it down to spring training because I knew it would be flying around. So,
yeah,
but yes, I will.
So you got to fly that to Wilmington.
Yeah, well, I'm actually going to – Corey's down here.
Right.
He's driving
the
bus.
Yeah, throw it in the van. Perfect. Absolutely.
Yeah, right, exactly.
There you go. Well, Casey, thank you so much for a few minutes. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk soon. Good luck this weekend. Get a couple wins.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Build out a summer of fun with your own 2022 Jersey Shore Blue Claws mini plan. Five of the best games of the year. Plus, you'll get dinner and dessert at each game. Boardwalk game tickets at each game. An exclusive season ticket holder gift. Complimentary tickets to opening night at the Jersey Shore April 8th, presented by Jenkinson's Boardwalk 2. Log on to blueclaws.com/memberships today or call 732-901-7000 option 3 and tell them Hook, Line, and Splitter sent you. 732-901-7000 option 3 or blueclaws.com/memberships. Hook, Line, and Splitter at Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast is brought to you by NJR Home Services, your local experts for heating, cooling, water heaters, generators, and solar. For over two decades, NJR Home Services has made sure home is where you're most comfortable. From heating and cooling to water heaters, generators, and solar, trust your home to NJR Home Services. Thanks to Casey Martin for joining us today on Hook, Line, and Splitter. He was great. I hope you enjoyed that. He was honest about the play in Asheville and just going in there and being physical. I like the Dustin Pedroia stuff that he talked about as well. He has basically been the three hitter and shortstop for the Blue Claws. He played some second base at the beginning of the year, but remember Luis Garcia, who began the year as the Blue Claws second baseman and middle infielder, shortstop with Casey, got hurt in the third series of the year. So he's been out for a while, and Casey's been the everyday shortstop since then. We're taping this on Friday, the 13th. Blue Claws in Bowling Green this week. They lost the first game, won the second game on Wednesday, 9-3. Dropped last night, 6-5 to the Hot Rods. McCarthy Tatum's had a good series. He's had four hits in the last two games. Both Tatum and Jared Carr have hit home runs over the last two days as well for the Blue Claws. Johan Rojas stole two bases on Thursday night. He's a perfect 18 for 18 right now, fifth most in the minors. As a team, the Blue Claws are 65 for 75, fifth most stolen bases in the minors. Martin has 5 and 22 in his career. Rojas has 18. Ethan Wilson has 12. The two of them are 30 for 32 between them. Rojas is 18 for 18. And then DJ Stewart has 9. Jared Carr has 8. Casey Martin has 5. McCarthy Tatum has 4. So a lot of different guys can swipe a base. The Blue Claws have 10 games already with at least 3 stolen bases, and they've stolen a base in all but 3 games so far this season. It's been a theme for sure for the Blue Claws early on here in 2022. Another thing that we wanted to mention before we said goodbye for this episode, just a quick promo rundown for the Blue Claws over the next couple of weeks. So right now the team is on the road. They will be back from Bowling Green, Kentucky, and go to Wilmington, Delaware. It's a classic South Atlantic League trip, Bowling Green to Wilmington. So they'll be there next week and then won't be back home again until Tuesday, May 24th. So home those days beginning the 24th through June 5th. It'll be Greenville, the Red Sox affiliate, and then Brooklyn, the Mets affiliate in town for the 2 weeks. So May 25th is a day game. That's a Wednesday, 11:05. And then Thursday, May 26th, Marvel's Defenders of the Diamond. Spider-Man will be here. Special Doctor Strange-inspired jerseys to be auctioned off for Blue Claws charities. That auction will start soon, so you can check that out at blueclaws.com as well. Friday, May 27th, Saturday, May 28th, and then Sunday, May 29th. Those are all, it's Memorial Day weekend at the Jersey Shore. Blue Claws obviously a part of that, so enjoy that. Brooklyn will be here beginning on Tuesday the 31st. Remember, no game on Memorial Day. It's kind of weird, you know, no game on Memorial Day, kind of a classic baseball day, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, but no game on Memorial Day, and then Brooklyn will be in town. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. Thursday night is First Responders Night, obviously also another Thursday. That'll be the fourth one of the year. June 3rd, Pride Night. First 1,500 fans get a Blue Claws Pride Night cap, thanks to Coca-Cola. Post-game fireworks are back that day as well, so that's a great day to come out. And then Saturday, June 4th, another family fun weekend. Kids are on the bases after that game, like every game, thanks to the Children's Specialized Hospital. Sunday, June 5th, is the rescheduled Bark in the Park. So if you go back to last weekend, Friday, May 6th, and Saturday, May 7th, washout. Saturday the 7th was supposed to be Bark in the Park. Rained out, just a really awful day, and no chance to play. And in fact, we didn't open the gates on either day. More on that in a moment. But the Bark in the Park was rescheduled until Sunday, June 5th. So that'll be that day. Pregame festival in front of the ballpark from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. And then bring your dogs and all that. Kids run the bases. So that's what's coming up. BlueClaws.com for more. For tickets, fire pits available. So it should be a fun week at the ballpark. That weekend, though, last weekend was crazy because if you go back and look, the Blue Claws were a part of this I-95 corridor. Aberdeen in Maryland, Northern Maryland. Wilmington in Northern Delaware. The Phillies, the Blue Claws, and then go further north, Somerset and the Yankees. So give or take, the I-95 corridor there. Six teams, 2 days, Friday and Saturday, and not one of them even opened the gates to the stadium, which is pretty incredible when you think about it, to go 2 days and have nobody even open up the gates to the stadium on a Friday and Saturday, no less. So just it was crazy. But as you saw, the weather was just atrocious and there was nothing anybody could do about it. So that'll be made up. Blue Claws played a doubleheader on Sunday, but obviously only could get in five of the scheduled six against Hudson Valley. So that last game will be made up on June the 14th when the Blue Claws go up to Hudson Valley to take on the Renegades up there. They'll play seven games in 6 days in that series. And then the Blue Claws will also play June 14th, they're here against Aberdeen. They'll resume a suspended game against the Ironbirds, a game that was suspended on May 1st down there. And then on June 8th, the Blue Claws will be in Hudson Valley. That's a Wednesday, and they'll make up the game that was rained out on May 8th, on Saturday, at Shoretown Ballpark. So you got that stuff going on. So follow along, blueclaws.com. Of course, you can watch all the games on MILB TV. Every game except the Wilmington series. I think there are two trips to Wilmington this year, but every game besides that, the Blue Claws play will be streamed live on MILB.tv. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off on your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963. The Blue Claws and the Hot Rods this week. Blue Claws are in Wilmington next week, and then back home, the Greenville Driver in town on May 24th. Very much looking forward to that. So that'll do it for us here on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks, of course, to our very special guest, Blue Claws shortstop Casey Martin. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you learned something. We will see you soon. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody. See you on May 24th at Shoretown Ballpark. Thanks for listening to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.